is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Belcher with Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're in a time machine. It's 50 years ago, 1972-73. Richard Nixon's in the White House. His re-election is overwhelmingly successful. In November of 72, he takes office in January of 73 again and follows through on what he's been putting together for these last years, which is an opening to China. However, Gregory has a fresh information about what Nixon imagined, planned, that was going to happen to the PRC, quite profoundly different than what we have today, a near-peer rival challenging the U.S. for supremacy. Gregory, 50 years ago, Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, and their counselors divided Russia from Moscow from Beijing. That was plan one. That was part one. But there was a part two never acted upon. What was it?
Well, yes. In fact, Nixon wanted to break up what was seen as a quasi-monolithic communist bloc of opposition. And he knew that there was underlying hostility between the Russians and the Soviets with the Chinese communists, or in fact, historically, between the Russians and the Chinese, you might say. But that that rivalry had burst into open conflict on a number of occasions, and a number of strategists, particularly Dr. Stefan Personi, my old partner, was engaged in documenting that, because in Washington, during the early 1970s, during the Vietnam War in the late 60s and early 70s, there was no belief that there was a rift at all between Beijing and Moscow. So we had to demonstrate that there was, and that that Mao Zedong felt that he was in an inferior position to the Soviet communists and wanted to break away to get his own independence as a world power. At that time, of course, the West, the US in particular, regarded the Soviet Union as the primary threat, as indeed it was. So the key thing was to break the PRC away from the USSR. Now, what happened, and I knew a lot of the players in this at that time, Personi being one of them, but also knew the Shah of Iran and his foreign minister at the time, Ardeshir Zahedi, who later became, for the second time, ambassador to Washington, and the Pakistani ambassador to Washington. And they put together with their respective governments an access to get a message to Mao Zedong, who was, if you like, weathering a lot of storms, because he had taken the People's Republic of China down a very bad path, which had ended its economic viability altogether. Bear in mind, he had 60 million plus people dying as a result of his economic and political policies. So Nixon, quite rightly, undertook this mission to break Beijing away from Moscow. And of course, his national security at the time was Dr. Henry Kissinger, and his chief of staff at the White House was General Alexander Haig. And it was Haig who basically did the footwork on dealing with the Pakistani ambassador and the Iranian ambassador and foreign minister to get the message across to Mao. That was critical, because the U.S. had tried in the past to get messages to Mao, and they'd been rebuffed. This time it was successful. However, the success led to the destruction of Nixon's program. Nixon was not anxious to support the Communist Party of China by any means at all. He just wanted to break up this opposition. And he offered Mao a number of incentives, which he was wavering on in terms of delivering the things that Mao Zedong wanted. But the Soviets didn't take this lying down, and nobody has ever discussed this before, and it's something which had always been keeping me up at nights. And I wish I'd had more time with the players, particularly Personi, who died in 1995, to get to the bottom of this. Because what happened was that the Soviets, having been defeated in having Beijing being split from it, decided to get rid of Nixon. That was a clearly a key part of it. They were certainly not going to accept that that the U.S. could get away with this rapprochement with Beijing. And they'd hoped that Nixon could be removed from office in the United States before he began his second term in office. And bear in mind that he was, in 73, overwhelmingly re-elected to the presidency. So there was little chance that Nixon could have been defeated at the ballot box. So when he came into office in 74, there was a concerted attempt. 73. When he came into office, it was a concerted attempt to make sure that he didn't remain in office. And we saw the Watergate program taking place. And we saw that there was a deliberate leak from the FBI and other places in the administration at a time when the Soviets had unprecedented degrees of penetration of the U.S. intelligence community, national security community, and most parts of government. So we saw the success of the whole Watergate situation. Nixon, as you know, didn't trust the intelligence community because he knew that the Soviets had penetrated it. He'd had very positive indications of Soviet penetrations of the intelligence community. So he set up his own group, the Plumbers, which is a White House intelligence unit. Basically, the name the Plumbers, of course, was to stop the leaks from the U.S. intelligence community to the Soviet Union. The Soviets were aware that this was going on, and they were not about to let Nixon get away with that. And at the first opportunity, they were able to exploit the Plumbers' zealousness and use this as an excuse to take Nixon down and to start the impeachment.
What was President Nixon's plan about the PRC that he didn't get to follow through on after his because he resigned in August of 74? What did he intend to do?
Well, he had overtly promised to help the PRC into the mainstream global political environment, but he certainly did not intend to continue with that. Certainly not to let them have an unfettered growth, nor to allow U.S. investment and technology transfer to give Maoist China the advantages which it sought. So, when Nixon was literally overthrown and was forced to resign, you had a brief period where Gerald Ford was busy trying to rebuild the internal status or equanimity in the U.S. polity, but then replaced by Jimmy Carter, who literally knew nothing about this situation and was prepared to give Beijing what it wanted, because it was like the floodgates had been opened and there was nobody to close them, and so Jimmy Carter just allowed it to continue. That's something that Nixon would never have done. We know that he was profoundly anti-communist, and that meant he was profoundly against the Chinese Communist Party as well as the Communist Party of the Soviet Union.
Did he have a plan to undermine the PRC or just limit its access? What was his plan?
I believe that his plan was to ensure that he kept the PRC away from Moscow, but not to give it enough flexibility that it could make major headway as an economic or industrial power to cause a new problem for the West.
And Mao died in, I believe, 1976. After that, his successors were presenting themselves as peaceful, as people seeking to help the Chinese people. Were they deceiving Washington, Carter and Reagan?
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, the whole policy of the communist parties of the Soviet Union and of China has been to basically keep their intentions secret, although they've never actually disguised the intention to go for global ideological domination and to challenge the West in strategic terms. And that's never been that's never gone away, and it's never been denied. The problem is that the West never believed it because they didn't even think that it was possible. But now we see that they've been true to their doctrine, and the U.S. Stopped being true to its, if you like, containment of the communist bloc, which Nixon had been committed to.
Bush, the senior, H.W. Bush, was he of a mind to give China what it wanted?
To a lesser degree than Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton or the Biden administration, to be sure. But I don't think that he was as ideologically sophisticated or as worldly wise as he thought he was. He certainly was no match for the natural strategic instincts of Nixon and Reagan. So I believe that President George H.W. Bush was, to put it mildly, slightly naive in this issue.
And President Clinton, he gave WTO and trade status to China. He was deceived. Is that correct?
I believe that he didn't care one way or another and felt that he would benefit from it politically, and that the global trade would wipe out ideological differences. And we know that that's not been the case.
So what we have today is a near peer or peer empire looking for global supremacy that in 50 years deceived everyone in the White House and cooperated to the extent it wished in order to get to the place it is now, where it is pushing back hard. This is 50 years of American achievement, I guess, is what we're looking at across the table.
Yeah, and to make matters worse, we saw quite a number of U.S. administrations since the end of the Cold War undertake policies which actually forced post-Soviet Russia back into the arms of Beijing, this time with Russia as arguably the junior partner instead of the senior partner. But this was something which Reagan and Nixon had fought hard against, as did Personi when he was the strategic advisor to both of those presidents.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're in the time machine. We're going back to 2023 and talk about monarchy in 2023.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.